It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, how long do you believe it takes to drive from the greater Iowa City, Coralville, North Liberty metro area to Chicago?
Like downtown Chicago or a suburb of Chicago?
I'm just looking for a rough estimate. So,
three and a half hours. Roughly.
You are correct. As is apparently everyone else in the world, except me.
Except you.
I apparently come from a different dimension. I have spent, for as long as it has mattered how far away it was to get to Chicago, I have been under the impression that it is 4.5 to 5 hours to Chicago.
Oh.
Which is why when we were talking earlier, I talked about how we were going to be in the car for 10 hours. And when I talked to my wife about going to see Six that one time, I said, I don't want to do 10 hours in the car in one day. No one has ever corrected me. But in preparation for our upcoming trip, I was looking at timing and stuff like that. And yeah, it's like three and a half.
Mm-hmm.
To where we're going is a little closer. So it's more like 3.25.
Right.
But even if I just said to Chicago, mm-hmm. 3.5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do not know where this has come from. The only theory I have going is I used to live an hour on the other side of where I live now. And so from there, it would have been about 4.5.
From Grinnell, yeah.
But I don't think I ever went to Chicago from there.
Well, you maybe knew people who did, though, and talked about
it. Yeah, and I probably went from Chicago to here because I once took the Greyhound back. So maybe, And that probably went through Chicago. But that's the only thing I can think of. No, I've always been in the impression about 4 hours to Minneapolis, 3.5 hours to St. Louis, 4.5 to 5 hours to Chicago. Apparently, it is 3.5 hours to Chicago, 4.5 to 5 hours to Minneapolis. And then apparently I'm mostly right about St. Louis. It's like 3.5.
I don't remember you saying 10 hours. Or maybe I thought you were just, you know, throwing out. I mean, the difference between 7 and 10, maybe I just thought you were just sort of throwing out a number that's close enough, round number. I don't know.
You thought I didn't get how single digit numbers were.
Well, I mean, I didn't think you were going for accuracy, so I guess I didn't.
I was watching one of my favorite shows on the Dropout streaming service called Make Some Noise that is just improv prompts. That's the whole show, and that's why I like it. And they had one where there's three people, and one of them was going to be a foreign diplomat speaking in a foreign gibberish language. And then the other two would take turns translating what they said.
Oh.
And he said, and for this, we're going to give you a little piece of art to work with. And he brought out the thing, and it was like a white flag. It was like a stick. And so one of the guys, Paul F. Tompkins, actually was like, little piece of art? Did you mean prop? And the host was like, really big. Like, did you forget the word for prop?
Little piece of art.
Little piece of art.
So, that's funny.
I'm thinking, and now you think I don't know single digit numbers. So, sorry, I've got some. There we go. I think ever, this might be a glasses wear thing more, but like I had a hair in the way, but I can't tell if it's like in front of the glasses or behind the glasses and what. So I was trying to fix it, but I think it is now gone. Very bothersome. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world giving you up to the minute travel times if you live right where we live, and otherwise, I mean, like, if you do live here, this is probably quite boring. If you don't live here, I assume you've fallen asleep, and I do not blame you. It's good content. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 700.
700.
Yep. We like those.
Even more than 600, begging the question, why?
Raising the question. We like those numbers that end in two zeros.
They give us a sense of accomplishment.
Yeah. An unearned sense of accomplishment. But... Yeah,
ambiguous also. have this feeling like we've done something.
Yeah, but it's a sense of accomplishment.
Not necessarily something we should be happy about, but something has happened.
Yeah.
You can't. When you've done it 700 times, you can't deny something has happened.
Yep.
I mean, I think that's the point at which you can no longer claim they're not a serial killer.
At least.
450 or so, you're like, fashion.
Accident.
But at 700, you're like, clearly,
there's a
vision, there's a manifesto.
Yeah,
there's
all
a
that.
Whole deal.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're like serial killers now. What? Huh?
Serial something. I mean, that we do have that part in common, the serial part.
I did see a commercial the other day because I was watching something free with ads, and apparently there is now a strawberry milkshake flavor of Frosted Flakes, and I was kind of like, kind of want to get that. If you're just joining us for the first time, welcome to the 700th time. Go back early if you want to see back when we had hope and enthusiasm. You have to go back pretty far, but we have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People who need people are, in addition to being the luckiest people in the world, also write into this email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. With whatever the crap they want, questions, topics, comments, diatribes, manifestos, ASCII art, I assume. The hat, magically, all on its own, forwards email to us. It was doing this kind of shit before AI, so. And we read them on the air, talk about them, so we're bored. That's the whole show, except a lot of it is not that. But
what if the hat is AI? I mean,
I don't know. Then it's taking the job of a person who could. I saw a little cartoon the other day, and I this is not necessarily my opinion on AI, but I thought it was really adorable. It was a little cartoon cat fishing beside a river, and it said artists. And then there was another cat a little ways behind it that said AI that was fishing out of the bucket that it was putting its fish in. I don't know, that one's kind of cute. So, are you excited about the Borderlands movie?
No.
I am.
We did try to play Borderlands and didn't really like it that much, so we didn't.
I played Borderlands 2 because I was told it was way better than Borderlands 1. So I tried that and played it for a while. It was fine. I didn't give a shit about Borderlands when I heard about it and when I saw the trailer. Now, however, I'm very, very excited.
Why?
Because this apparently just an absolute train wreck.
Oh, I did hear that, yeah.
I'm very excited to see it. Two stipulations here. I will not be paying any money to see it. And I will be high when I see it.
Well, so you're waiting for it to be out on digital.
I do not. I'm not like bucking the trend and thinking it's going to be good. No, I think it's going to be gloriously terrible. It's just got such a history of development hell and going through multiple directors, 10 different writers, ridiculous extensive reshoots because the actual bulk of the film was shot 3 years ago. It has such huge names in it, some of whom are such poorly casting choices. And just from watching the trailer, I already could tell, like, my limited knowledge of this game, and it's pretty limited. This is nothing like the game. So I am excited to see how badly they have fucked this up. Apparently they have.
Why is it so easy to mess up video game movies? I don't understand that.
Well, this is an interesting thing because I was actually just watching a thing before then. I think there, when you're doing this within the system, there is what you want to get out of your video game movie adaptation is not easily answered. Like, everybody would think, just make a movie that's like the video game. But that's going to alienate people who aren't necessarily into the video game. And, like, in the case of this one, they made it PG-13. And they made it PG-13 for all the reasons they always make these kind of movies PG-13. And yet, Borderlands is not a PG-13 game. Borderlands' whole deal is gore and violence and like satirically so. The whole thing is, like, comedic violence. And this one, apparently a lot of the filming had a lot of that stuff, and it was filmed as an R essentially, but now it got edited into this. And also it's the same thing with whenever a woman is in a movie. If you make a video game adaptation film, whatever happens to that film For a time period, the entirety of the movie making industry assumes that's what it'll be like for all movie films. Or for all video game films. So if it does poorly, you're like, oh, we have to change everything about it. Or if it does well, we're like, oh, we can make a ton of these real fast. It'll be fine. And I mean, because they're crushing it in other ways as TV shows, Last of Us and Fallout, killing it right now.
Well,
but a lot of these video game movies.
And the Mario movie did well.
Yes. And the Mario movie was done very simple. The Mario movie was done to pander and just very sort of straightforward. And it was, if you liked Mario, you would like it, you know, that kind of thing. It was also geared much more towards kids. This one appears to be skewed a little more towards younger audiences, which, again, it's not that kind of thing. But it's also just filmed by committee and all that kind of thing and all that. I mean, so many different directors and writers going into it. I never understand, but
and when that happens, that happens a lot with them too, is like you said, reshoots, multiple writers and all that. So, but
and all the filmmakers have their own opinions about how much they want to know that there is an upcoming television show based on a series of video games that was originally called Yakuza and now is called Like a Dragon, because we're trying to get away from the criminal references in it. But it is about the Yakuza, essentially. And it's a hugely popular series of video games, and they are making a TV show about it. And the dude who is directing the TV show has specified that he knows nothing about the video games and does not intend to find out because he wants to make something different. Which begs the question, then, why are you using this name? But this kind of shit happens. There are a lot of older video game adaptation movies where virtually they had very little knowledge of the video games or chose to ignore it.
Which is odd. I mean, if someone said, I'm adapting this book, but I haven't read it, I mean, wouldn't people think that was a bad idea?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And to be fair, they do that sometimes, too.
Well, sure. Sure they do. Yeah.
Borderlands, without spoiling anything, which is hard to do because I haven't seen it yet, but the Borderlands movie is also incorporating from a variety of games in the series in sort of a mishmash way, which is fine. You don't have to tell the same story, but at the same time, they're clearly grabbing things because they're like, oh, this was popular. We'll shove that in here. And also, from what I can gather, the big reveal and twist at the end of the movie is something that if, like, you and Abby will probably already know. It's basically a central conceit of the property.
Mm.
But it's presented as a big twist.
Oh.
So, yeah. No, apparently it's just real, 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 real bad. And I am excited for that.
I mean, I was talking to Abby about this yesterday. I was saying, how hard can it? I mean, a lot of video games, like, if this is even a thing on YouTube, right? Well, they'll take all the cutscenes and they'll put them all together like a movie. You, if you want, you can watch a video game like a movie. It'll be a little weird because there's stuff in between that you won't know or whatever. Yeah, but for the most part, it goes like a real movie. So, how hard, like, you could make that in sometimes, right? You could just tell that story. The game players would probably like just to see it as a movie like that. Presumably, the story is compelling enough to get people to play the game, so you could probably get people to come to the movie if it's like that mostly. I mean, I don't understand why it's hard, except for what you're saying is that all of the business minds that approach it all have a very different idea or opinion, and they just can't come to any agreement on it. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, if you got one person who gets to make all the decisions,
yeah,
and they are a fan of the original product
of the property,
usually get pretty good.
Yeah,
you do have exceptions. Zack Snyder's Watchmen is a great example. He's a huge fan, but he clearly, in my opinion, doesn't get it.
Right, right.
Like, what he got out of Watchmen is not what I got out of Watchmen.
Yeah, but that's different. The creative not getting it is different than too many cooks in the kitchen. I mean, that's a very different thing. Yeah.
But yeah, if you had just given Eli Roth, which is the director we sort of ended up with, although he's being listed as a director, but he also left at a certain point. He didn't do the research and shit, so I don't know. But if you had just given Eli Roth $115 million, which apparently is what it was, and told him to make a Borderlands movie and left him to do it, probably would look pretty accurate.
Hmm.
And I'm not a fan of Eli Roth, but I'll bet he would have done a great job with it. But
So why, I mean, I guess it's not really video games uniquely, is it? I mean, they ruin book adaptations too. I don't know what I'm.
Oh yeah, there are certain YouTube channels that I peruse that are very specifically about, here's an adaptation of a book or something, like, how does it stack up?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a compare and contrast kind of thing.
Right.
Very interesting.
So it's just the video games is kind of a very recent and kind of spectacular failures, but this is the way it's been forever.
And it's still, video games are very much mainstream now, but it's still a thing where there are people who are like, I don't really get video games. Like, nobody ever says, nobody's still alive today is like, I don't really get movies. Like, that's, I'm sure there were people back in the day.
Or novels or novel adaptations.
Yeah. Nobody's like, I don't get books. How do those work? Like, no. But there are still lots of people who are like,
and comic books too. Who comic books is sound like? I don't get comic books. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's even true. Within that front, I have a niece who plays a lot of video games on her computer. When she found out I was getting an Xbox, she was really surprised. And I said, why? And she said, I always thought Xbox was more for people who like sports games.
Huh.
And I'm just like, I can't even begin to tell you how inaccurate. Like, I still think about it. This was months ago. I still think about it sometimes. I'm like, that maybe for a second once when the first Xbox was released, that was a thing. Maybe. I'm not even sure then. But like
Wow.
nowadays, 90% of all the console video games are identical between PlayStation and Xbox. And the ones that aren't certainly don't follow sports games especially. I don't think there are very many console exclusive sports games out there. So yeah, I don't know what the fuck. But and this is somebody who is a gamer and who is significantly younger than me. So it's not there yet. But we're working on it. I'm
Well,
working on it.
another interesting thing someone mentioned, I saw someone mentioned who was a journalist, I guess, that, when books are only so popular, right? And they only make so much money. You're really leveling up a book when you make it into a movie sometimes. Video games make a lot of money.
Oh yeah.
They don't,
Oh yeah.
you're not really leveling them up to make them into a movie. You're hopefully making more money, but it's really a very different thing. And I thought that was interesting because I can't think of anything you could adapt that's, I mean, just about anything else, like a comic book, a novel, whatever, that you adapt is supposed to be kind of a level up, or oh, this is really going to be a boost to this property. But for a video game, that can be true, I'm sure, but for the ones, most of the ones they're trying to adapt, it's like, no, this isn't really a boost. This is just supposed to be a vertical, expansion.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that has something to do
Also,
with it.
there's a lot less auteurship in a video game situation. We adapted this John le Carré novel. It was a success. Let's adapt more John le Carré novels.
Right.
We adapted this Alan Moore comic book. It was a success. Let's adapt more Alan Moore comic books. We adapted this video game from Insomniac Studios. Nobody's like, oh, people love movie versions of Insomniac games. Like, that's not how you do that. They're still considered like sort of a separate genre outside. And a video game studio will make a lot of games of varying genres and things like that. So it's not, it is much more rare with authors of comics or novels to be like, yeah, I wrote this one and then I wrote this one that's completely different.
Yeah,
And
it makes a video game adaptation almost more like a reboot than an adaptation,
a
right?
bit, yeah.
Because the video game itself is kind of like its own blockbuster movie. So you're rebooting it more than you're
And
adapting it.
it also becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because as a percentage of video games made into movies, a high percentage of them sucked. And that makes the business more scared. The Uncharted movie, which I very much did not like, although to be fair, I'm not super familiar with the property, just thought it sucked, apparently was big enough that it may get a sequel. But apparently, it also was in development hell for like a decade. Like they could not, and in fact, Sony had to basically open up their own wing of motion picture making to get it over the plate finally. I mean, it famously took long enough that originally Mark Wahlberg was going to play the lead, and then he got too old, so he had to play the older mentor character. And they
Really?
brought in Tom Holland. He was going to be Nathan Drake. But it went on for so long that they were like, he's too old to play Nathan Drake.
Yeah, I mean that film, I don't know. They
I
it
didn't
did
like
get
that film at
something
all,
right. Like
personally.
if you play the games, which we have, it did get something right and right enough. I mean, I've only watched it once. I don't can't imagine ever wanting to watch it again necessarily, but I felt like it was a good Uncharted movie, even though I didn't feel like Tom Holland was very well cast. I didn't think anyone was very well cast, honestly. But it still worked somehow. I don't know how they got some most of it right is from a from the perspective of someone who's played the games. Well, I mean, it just goes to show that that you can take some risk or you can do things that maybe the gaming community is not excited about at first and still get it done somehow. Because I think the gaming community actually kind of liked it in the end, even though it was,
you know. Like I said, it apparently made enough money that it probably is getting a sequel. Which is really the definition for those kind of things.
Well, and then you've got those like the Dungeons and Dragons movies. Like for me, I kind of think of them as video game movies because that's how I've mostly played Dungeons and Dragons. But I know they're not. They're based on the tabletop game. I get it. But they can't even get that right, which is weird.
But that becomes a thing. As somebody who's played a lot of D&D, I thought they did a great job with the most recent one.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
It did not do financially very well.
No, I liked it too. I liked it too.
The 2001 was garbage.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently the two direct-to-video sequels or direct-to-TV, like sci-fi channel sequels to that first one are kind of good.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The original Super Mario Brothers movie, that's a classic of terrible film for so many reasons. The history for that is also very muddled with a lot of different people having different visions, but... it's crazy. Anyway, how's your week been?
Good. I mean, went to the state fair.
You did? Yay!
Yeah.
Did you eat anything on a stick?
No. Well,
then didn't really go to the state
Which fair. Is weird because I usually do, but no, I did not. I ate some things I didn't. I don't usually there. But none of them were on a stick. Huh. I guess I should have made that a priority. It was very crowded. Super crowded.
I was hoping on our little adventure to Schaumburg, we were going to be close enough that we could go eat at a White Castle. Because that's still on my bucket list. And they make Impossible Sliders now.
Oh, they do.
So you could eat some. Yeah.
That'd be fun.
And in some choice irony, there's one quite close to where we're staying. But we will never be there for a lunch or dinner that is not already spoken for.
Oh. Well, shoot.
I guess if we really sleep in on Sunday, we could hit it around lunchtime. But I feel like that's probably pushing it. But we'll see.
Yeah, so one of the big things we did there was we watched the cowboy mounted shooting competition. Have you heard of that?
No, but I love where you put the pauses in. It really sounds like people were mounted on cowboys and then shooting at things.
So you, a person, and a man or woman, it doesn't matter, will ride kind of a circuit, so like a course is made, and it has various configurations, but you have to ride your horse as fast as you can through this course. You know, sometimes it's just ride around
everybody you see,
sometimes it's right around a circle, sometimes you have to figure eight it or whatever. It is, the course is different in different circumstances, but along this course are these sticks with balloons on them, and you have to shoot the balloon. You use a normal six gun, basically like an actual gun, but you use these special blanks, and I think all blanks will discharge something through the, like, didn't someone famously die that way? They were messing around, they had a gun with blanks in it, and they put it up to their temple and shot, and it killed them.
If they did, I have not been surprised.
I want to say it was one of the guy who played the crow or whatever who.
No, he didn't. That's not a, he died because he got shot with an actual gun.
Oh, an actual gun. Okay. So I'm thinking of something else. Anyhow, but these guns, if you're like 20 feet away, I think and you shoot at a balloon, it'll pop the balloon almost every time. It wouldn't hurt a person, but it would pop a balloon anyhow. So you have to shoot these balloons, several of them, and you've got to finish it in the smallest amount of time possible. And if you miss a balloon, that takes off your time. Or if you knock over the stick, it takes off your time or whatever. So we were watching those competitions. That's pretty fun to watch these people just ride really fast and shoot these balloons. It was pretty fun to watch. I mean, maybe it didn't sound very fun, but it was fun.
Who all went?
Well, you know, Abby went, and Scott showed up and spent the day with us too. Now my sister was there and my stepmother was there too, but they were doing different things. I mean, we'd cross paths once in a while, but they weren't interested in the same things we were interested in. Now, when I went into the usual places like the Ag Building and all that stuff, and they were so crowded, I didn't really get to see all the stuff I usually do, but it was okay because the weather was so nice.
That's probably why it was so crowded. I wonder what this animal was. This
was Friday. They set records on Saturday for attendance, but Friday, I think they set a record that day too. But it was just so nice outside.
First year post COVID that it wasn't like insanely hot.
Right. So yeah, I mean, I would go into a place and it'd be so crowded I couldn't really see the stuff I usually see, but it was okay because I just go outside because it was beautiful outside. And it was fun to be there. We had a good time. And then the next day I was just down at the farm because it's, you know, August 12th which is when we're recording today, but everyone's going to see this on Thursday. August 12th is my mom's birthday. She would have been 80 years old. And so, you know, we kind of got together to sort of celebrate that down at the farm, and that was nice. So yeah, it was a good time. It was a little hard though too, you know, because we pretty much have always celebrated mom's birthday and gone to the fair, and usually at the same time, because mom used to like to go to the fair. But you know, for most of the last 18 years that mom's been gone, dad's been around with us to do that. And you know, now he's not. So that made it a little, sad, I guess is the best word for it. But still, it was, you know, it's always good to get together and to remember mom and go to the fair. The fair is always fun to go to for me, as you know. So there was some, you know, sadness to it. But this is what happens, right? When you lose someone, it's almost the whole next year is like, oh. You know, this is the first time, it's going to be the first Thanksgiving without dad, the first Christmas without dad, and all that stuff. And you just have to get through it. But that's pretty much, we didn't really see any movies or anything that I know of. What about you? How was your week?
It was all right. I had a couple of sort of health things that slowed down a couple of days, but they were very temporary. Finished Ted Lasso.
Oh, okay. So now you have a broad series long perspective to say how you felt about it.
And now I need to do a little bit of research because I have heard a lot of people didn't like the third season and particularly didn't like the ending. And I don't, at this point, having just watched it and not looked into it, I don't understand why.
Oh.
Like, I have said, I think the third season is the weakest season. I hold that to be true. The bar is so high, though. I think the third season is an incredibly great season of television. Mm. I loved it. I just think it is weaker than the other two. Mm. Something about it, the first two felt like we have something to say. Let's put it into a TV show. This one felt like, okay, now we're going to wrap up this TV show. What do we say? And it's the same brilliant people, and I think they did a brilliant job. It just didn't feel just a little bit, but I still loved it. Being the weakest of the three in such an incredible show is perfect about it. And the ending, I can pick out things that like maybe somebody would have preferred it go this way or whatever, but nothing that was like, oh, this is betraying the spirit or this is not what that character would end up like I don't get it, so I might have to look into that a little bit. Did get me weepy a fair bit in the last couple episodes. Did have one thing that, for personal reasons, I don't know who watches and listens to these, know that I will say something hit me very personally very hard, and I just lost it. Sobbing. Oh, part of it. But like I said, I don't. It involves personal, interpersonal things, and I don't know who watches this, so keep it myself, but it very much resonated there. I'm very comfortable with the ending. I am glad it's over in the sense that it did not live long enough to become a villain, as they say. I am happy with the end. In my perfect, you know, fan dream, would I have changed certain aspects of the end? Absolutely. Do I think a few things had to get sort of inorganically adjusted in order to get the result they wanted? Some places. Still a great season of television, and I still will hold that the show is my favorite show.
Nice.
Reservation Dogs is giving it a run for its money, though. We're about halfway through the last season. That show's really good. But no, I was very pleased.
I also am not sure what issues people would have with the ending. I didn't.
Nothing. And maybe I'm misconstrued, because I was very careful to avoid as many spoilers as I can. I really only kind of got one, and it was, in the grand scheme, pretty minor anyway. So yeah, I don't know, and I'm vacillating about whether or not I'm going to look into it, because I am curious, but I'm also like, who the hell cares what other people thought? I felt how I felt.
Right.
Also, and this is funny because this doesn't happen a lot for us, I learned of a movie's existence, and then a couple days later, we actually watched it, which usually just goes on a list and then eventually get around to it. But Max, who along with Hulu have been making some really good celebrity documentaries in recent years. Actually, a bunch of Apple has done something. There's some really good documentaries about celebrities lately that I've really enjoyed. Did one about Albert Brooks.
Oh.
And was specifically directed and created by Rob Reiner, who is one of his oldest friends. They've known each other since high school or something. And I am a fan of Albert Brooks. I always have been. I am not deep in the Albert Brooks lore, as it were.
Lore.
I love Defending Your Life. In fact, I was just thinking about it. That is yet another one of the movies that I'm like, oh, I've actually seen that several times. I haven't seen it in many years, but I have seen that movie multiple times, and I really do like it. I haven't seen a lot of his other movies. I've seen his other performance. I loved everything he ever did in The Simpsons. It was brilliant. He was on there a lot.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Going back as far as originally, he was Hank Scorpio. There's an early season episode where Homer gets a new job in a new town, and it turns out, and it's this whole planned community and everything, but it turns out the boss is actually like essentially a James Bond villain. And he's voiced by Albert Brooks, but Albert Brooks does a lot of it. He does a couple of key voices in the movie as well. But yeah, he shows up a lot. And he always does well. I've always thought he was a very funny guy. This was very interesting and very entertaining, and gave a pretty good history. I will say it's not a warts and all sort of documentary, but to be fair, as near as I can tell, I mean, again, from what knowledge I had and what knowledge this documentary has, there aren't big skeletons or things.
No.
There's not, like, he hasn't had, like, multiple marriages or anything. He hasn't struggled with substance abuse in particular or anything like that. He mostly was just very avant-garde as a comedian when he started his career. And that was a very big thing. And so we had a lot of other comedians talking about what an inspiration he was to them and stuff like that. And I liked it a lot. It was a really good time. The centerpiece for it is Rob Reiner and Albert Brooks just sitting in an empty restaurant at a table, clearly having had dinner, and just talking about stuff. And it's pretty fun. Also, and apparently this is common knowledge if you know Albert Brooks at all, Albert Brooks' actual name, Albert Einstein.
What?
That's not a joke. And he's the third boy in his family. So the Einsteins waited until their third kid to name him Albert. Just bonkers. Also, father, very famous comedic actor in a lot of old movies. Oh. Mother, very famous ingenue and singer in old movies until she got married and then started having kids and she sort of left the field. And the father died during a Friars Club meeting. That's as much as I'll say because it's a hell of a story. I'll leave it to the movie, but it's a very tragic and exactly the kind of way you want to go if you're a comedian, I would think. No, his dad, whose name I think was Harry Einstein or Henry Einstein, his stage name, he frequently portrayed a Greek, and his stage acting name was Parkyocharkus. And he was like a well-known in old black and white movies comedian.
No, come on. You're pulling my leg.
I'm not even kidding. And to the degree that you get to see newspaper headlines, like when he's courting his future wife and everything, and they're talking about Parky, they would sometimes call him, is finally getting married and stuff. It's fascinating. I would check it out.
Oh, man, that's Parky hilarious. That is a great fake Greek name, man. I never would have thought of that, but that's a really good one.
Carl Reiner famously said, I think on Carson, I don't know, at some point, somebody asked Carl Reiner who his favorite, funniest person he'd ever seen was, and he said, a 16-year-old boy who goes to school with my son named Albert Einstein. And it was literally a thing. There was a specific bit that Albert came up with that he did for Carl Reiner that apparently just killed him.
Hmm.
No pun intended. It's an escape act. Again, I don't want to spoil it. I think it's a very fun time. It's like an hour and a half. It's not like this freaking George Carlin thing. I don't find it particularly sad. There are some bits in it of him dealing with certain issues that, again, sort of resonated with me in ways. But, so yeah, I think it was a fun time, and I really want to rewatch Defending Your Life. Yeah, I think that's all I got this week. You want to pull out an email? I think we got at least a couple.
Yeah, we do have a couple. So, Azure Talon.
Oh, I've heard of that guy.
The subject line is, oh, yeah, but I think it's supposed to be like
the CSI opening?
No.
Oh.
Is it Randy Savage? No.
Oh, this is the thing I was thinking of recently. Randy Savage and the Kool-Aid Man have the same catchphrase.
Yeah, I think I'm supposed to read it like Randy Savage.
Think about that, though. And you can tell, too, if I go, oh, yeah, or if I go, oh, yeah. Like,
yeah.
You know, which is, but it's the same. It's, yeah. How weird is that?
And then
Randy Savage is one of those that is becoming a Peter Lorre. We are getting very close to a point where people will know a Randy Savage impression, but they won't know who Randy Savage is. And we have been at that point for decades now where people can tell if it's a Peter Lorre impression.
Yeah.
But they don't know, people are too young to know who Peter Lorre is. They just know that voice.
Yeah, they'll think.
And I think Randy Savage is hitting that point.
Instead of Peter Lorre, they'll think it's the worm in Corpse Bride.
That's the moment I realized it. Corpse, yeah. The worm in Corpse Bride was the first moment where I was like, so many people watching this movie don't know who that's an impression of.
Nope. And if
that
someone...
was, that's so hilarious that you said that. That is literally when I discovered this phenomenon, was watching Corpse Bride.
So in his opening line is, let's get ready to hat, which I suppose he means, let's get ready to hat, or whatever. What announcer, was there?
I don't remember his name, but it's copyrighted.
Let's get ready to rumble is copyrighted?
Yes. Hmm. And he has sued over it.
I don't even know how I know some of this stuff, because I never watched wrestling or anything.
Because he shows up in other, people hire him in movies.
I guess.
Just to be an announcer and just to say that line. Let's get ready to rumble. Yeah, he copyrighted that years ago.
So the question, as a talent has.
I hear people that it seems like they're doing it, but mm-hmm. they word it slightly different. And I'm like, oh, that's smart of you. Because he'll sue your ass.
He asks, best performance by a professional wrestler in a feature film, and says, one time SCW Quad City. Oh, one time SCW Quad City belt holder Azure Talon. I'm sure that's not true, but no. So I mean,
okay, wait,
there are a number.
Azure Talon, if that is true, you need to get in the comments and tell us about it. I want to know if that's real. If I had to put money on it, would guess it is not. But he's a weird enough motherfucker, and it is the Quad Cities.
True.
It could be true.
Yeah.
I want to know. So get on there. Get on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, or get in the YouTube comments. Tell us about this. I want to know this story.
I mean, it's hard to top Roddy Piper in...
They Live?
Yeah. I mean, it's a terrible performance, but it's like classic, right? But then you've got Andre the Giant in
Princess Bride, also a good one.
Princess Bride, which is pretty good. So, I don't know.
We're living in an era where some of the world's most successful actors currently were/are pro wrestlers.
Yeah, like The Rock or whatever.
And John Cena.
John Cena.
That being said, I don't want him to hurt me, but The Rock has never given a performance I gave a shit about. He's just The Rock. I enjoy watching The Rock, but I would not call him an acting genius.
Dwayne Johnson.
I would call him a functional, competent actor in a very limited range.
Mm-hmm.
John Cena has done some pretty impressive performances. John Cena in the Peacemaker TV show was very good.
Who's the guy in Guardians? What's his name?
Oh, Dave Bautista.
Yeah, Bautista.
He's also real fun. Trish is particularly a fan of his stuff. Fun, competent actor in a limited range. Very much like The Rock.
Hmm.
Slightly different range, but it's still there for me. I mean, he's great. But if you want a actual wrestler that actually gave me a performance that really gets to me, probably CM Punk in The Girl on the Third Floor. Which to certain people will sound like I just made up all those words.
It does sound like that.
It does, doesn't it?
It does.
CM Punk is a former WWE wrestler, I believe. He had a variety of different personas and things. I don't know shit about him as a wrestler. He has become an actor, and he's done a few things, and the one that I can recall is a horror movie called The Girl on the Third Floor. And I think he does quite a good job.
Hmm.
If you guys want to see that kind of thing, it's on a variety of streaming services. You can find it around a lot. It's a small movie. I don't think it was ever wildly popular or anything, so. You can find it around. It's probably on Netflix. It is sort of a haunted house movie, but there's gets to be a little bit more to it than that. But basically, yeah, he plays a guy who just bought a house as a fixer-upper, and he's fixing it up before his wife arrives because they're moving, you know, to, and the house is a spookum's house. It's a shivers down your spine kind of house. I don't know. I thought it was good. I've seen it a couple times because I saw it, and then years later, I thought Trish would like it, and so I had her watch it. It's
Was
pretty good.
Randy Savage in anything else other than Spider-Man? I mean, he essentially played himself. I mean,
Yeah, I think so. I think
since
like Hulk Hogan, he did the rounds for a
did
little
a few
while.
things, yeah.
Honor the Giant in Princess Bride is real, real good.
Yeah, it's iconic, really.
I feel like I mean, and Mick Foley, Captain Lou Albano, these are both guys that did a lot of acting. Later, Mick Foley's done some good stuff.
I mean, I think you're right about John Cena, though. He has seemed to show more range than it seems like.
Well, and he spent 2 seconds trying to be turned into a heroic leading man, and then quickly he slash everybody figured out no, he needs comedy. And I liked him in Peacemaker a lot, and there's a lot of depth to that character. It's a comedic role. That's a comedic show. But there's a lot of interesting depth to that comedic show. And even so, he makes Vacation Friends worth watching. Vacation Friends is a goofy, it's kind of a Red Notice over on Hulu. And he makes it watchable. Because he's such a fun time in it. I think the first time I started paying attention to John Cena as an actor for real was in Trainwreck. The Amy Schumer led rom-com. He was basically who she was with at the start.
Okay.
And it was not a big part, but I enjoyed it in the same way that like I enjoy a 10-minute Channing Tatum cameo in most comedies. Channing Tatum is a good actor, but he's at his best when he's just like 10 minutes on the screen inside of a comedy.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't like Trainwreck very well, but I still remember Cena's thing. I also didn't particularly like Free Guy, and I love Channing Tatum's performance in that. This is the end. I did kind of enjoy This is the End, but I love Channing Tatum's performance. Yeah, it's always a weird move, and I'm trying to think of. I saw Ronda Rousey in a few. I mean, does she count? I think she might be MMA, not wrestling, but
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. But I saw her in a few things. I've never thought she was a good actor, in particular. Same thing with China Black, I think she was called eventually. I saw her in a couple of things. Nothing that exciting. The problem is, it has been so long since I have followed wrestling. I've probably seen some performances that I thought were good that were from wrestlers, and I didn't realize they were wrestlers.
Did you follow wrestling for a while?
When I was much younger, I did. And all indications are I should have kept up to it. I would have loved it to this
Really?
day.
Really?
Yes. Because I remember what I liked about it, and I know a lot of people. How do I put this? There is a lot of overlap with wrestling culture and nerd culture in general. There is also a lot. Multiple different unrelated sources, both personally and watching them on TV, have made a very strong argument for wrestling as drag. Essentially, it hits the same components and the same beats in the way it operates, the same manufactured drama, the same playing with gender assumptions, and like there's a lot in there. And it's a drama of a way that I can be comfortable with because it's all, you know, manufactured and all that, which is something I'm more comfortable with. It's not something I've ever wanted to get back into, but I have just, there are a lot of people that I follow for other reasons that I have learned are also big wrestling fans. And I have had people in my life be like, you should get into wrestling for this. Even back at Applied, I was already out of the game then. Some people we worked with there were like, we love this. And that was back at the age where I was still like, you know, it's all fake, right? And they're like, yeah, it's like a soap opera. That's, but there's lots going on.
Now, you grew up at a time where it seemed like the, first of all, wrestling was having a huge resurgence at that time, but also they were very much trying to get kids interested in it. Like there was a lot of action figures and cartoons and stuff. Because in my day, when, you know, Roddy Piper was like, he was like one of the guys when I was growing up, but this was like, they didn't have action figures. They didn't have cartoons. They didn't have like, you know, this was a, it was, I think it was still considered family entertainment. Like it was on in the afternoons on television. If you're,
well, which is why I watched it. Cause it was basically, I didn't have cable.
Yeah. We didn't
cartoons
either.
Were over. It was the most palatable thing on the TV, and I wasn't going to not have the TV on. And so I got into it, and I would say I was into wrestling, and coincidentally, not, I wasn't necessarily a huge Hulk Hogan fan, but I was into wrestling at the height of Hulkamania. Like, if you had asked me, well, back then it was still WWF wrestling. And if you had asked me, like, who the hero is of WWF, Hulk Hogan. And actually, Roddy Piper, in my head, was his nemesis for the time period I was watching.
Really?
Huh. They flipped around a lot and all that. But, yeah, they back in the day, they did not like each other. Actually, there's a Roddy Piper performance in an episode of Always Sunny in Philadelphia that is pretty solid.
Really? Interesting.
Yes. Now that I think about it. Because he did a few things. Like, we all know They Live. That was his most successful, at least in terms of long gestating. But he was in a few. He had a little bit of a time where he was in movies, and he never really had, like with Hulk Hogan, we tried to do the family friendly, and then of course Tropic Thunder. Do you remember Tropic Thunder?
Yes. Was he in that?
He was the lead in that. No, sorry, not Tropic Thunder. Thunder in Paradise.
Oh, no, I don't remember that.
It was a TV show. That was basically, what if we did Knight Rider, but it's a boat?
Oh, did the boat talk?
I don't think the boat talked, but it was like super high tech crime solving boat. piloted by two gentlemen. It's probably better to say Airwolf, but it's a boat. That's probably more.
Okay.
Airwolf, but it's a boat. And there were two guys crewing it, a guy I don't know who, and Hulk Hogan.
Wow.
And they were just solving crimes in the Caribbean, Miami, I don't know, somewhere with boats.
So I actually hated professional wrestling. I was perfectly happy to turn off the TV. Never liked it. I don't think I hate it today. I think I'm indifferent to it today, but there was a time where I really, like, I thought it was terrible. I didn't know how anyone could like it. Nobody had to tell me it was fake. To me, that was painfully obvious. But I have begun to appreciate it as an art form in the intervening years, not as someone who could watch it and be a fan of it, but I totally understand other people liking it. And I even understand people liking it back in my day. I don't know why I was so vehement about it, but I kind of was back then.
I've seen one episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. Only one. That's unusual for what you would expect from me.
It is, yeah.
We only watched that one because Kumail Nanjiani and his wife, Emily Gordon, were judges on that episode. So then we watched. I didn't like it. And it's probably the same reason I wouldn't like wrestling now, and the reason I don't think you like it. It's real trashy, mean melodrama. This is a problem I've talked about this before on this. This is a problem I have with drag comedians. I am very much in support of drag in general, and I go to drag performances, and that's great. But like stand-up drag, to me, is just nothing but being real mean and a lot of just sledgehammer levels of sexual innuendo and vulgarity. And neither of those are particularly things I enjoy. And I think wrestling, the same thing. It was so much, like the drama comes from we all hate each other and we're
Yeah, we
all
got a
going to
beef.
destroy each other and we're all going to constantly switch sides, which is great drama, not for you and me so much. I don't know because it's also ridiculously homoerotic. And as for there are many things from that time period that may have been tied into latent homosexual interest in my part that I wasn't aware. I've talked before about how like there are actors and celebrity men that I was very big fans of when I was younger, and when I got older, I was like, oh shit, I actually had a crush on them, I think. And so I don't know if that's a component with this as well. I don't think so, because in general, the wrestler bod is not something that's not my type. But I don't know about that. And I do also remember it being a thing that I wasn't 100% about if it was fake or not, or how much of it was fake.
Well, to be fair and to be clear, I also could not stand soap operas. Pretty much the same reason. It's like, how can anyone enjoy this? This is ridiculous. Now, over time, I began to understand why someone would like it. It again, not me, but I get it, right? But I was like, I hated soap operas. I hated wrestling. I hated
And
anything
it's an
like it.
empathizing thing. I mean, for, at least for me, I'm still in that same position where I don't like a horror movie if it is something that could actually happen. It's an empathy. I'm like, these are people being really mean. And, well, and it's the same idea of I don't understand what cringe comedy I like and what cringe comedy I don't. We just watched something the other day that was, oh, we watched a Christopher Guest movie. We watched Mascots. Which is,
I don't think I've seen that one.
it's not best in show. That's the best way to describe it. It's very much like best in show, but it's not best in show. Like, it's, I have a hard time picking what my favorite Christopher Guest movie is. It's not this one. That being said, it's still fun. Christopher Guest movies are always fun.
I think what's the one where he was a guy in a small town doing a musical?
Waiting for Guffman.
Yeah, right. And then A Mighty Wind and Best in
Best
Show.
show. And oh God, the one that's about making a movie called Home for Purim. I forget what the movie. Oh, For Your Consideration.
I think I might have seen
And then
that
of course
one.
Spinal Tap, but I've never seen Spinal Tap, which I know. Don't yell at your devices. I know.
Wow.
I gotta. Yeah. I need to do that. But I love Waiting for Guffman. We watched it again not
Yeah, I'd
long
say that's my favorite of all of them so
I
far
will
because it
say
was just so
this.
good.
Corky St. Clair, the character he plays in Waiting for Guffman, shows up in Mascots as a friend of the character being played by Parker Posey, but that is not the same character that Parker Posey played in Waiting for Guffman. I had to look it up at the time. It's just there, but he shows up in the movie. It also got they Mascots, because it's from 2016, has some new face. It doesn't have some of the old face. Catherine O'Hara's not there. Eugene Levy's not there. A lot of the old faces are there. including ones that you're just like, oh yeah, that's a person who's in every Christopher Guest movie. I don't know who they are, but they're just in every Christopher Guest movie. But then it has some newcomers, some that you know, like Zach Woods, other ones. Kerry Godleyman, who is a British comedian that I really like, gets a small-ish part in it that I enjoyed. It's fun. It's a good time. It's just, it's not as good as the earlier ones. But I realized while we were watching this, every Christopher Guest movie is pretty solidly just cringe.
Mm-hmm.
And I like them. So once again, I don't know what the difference is. The only thing Trish could come up with is she's like, it's not going after anyone else, really. It's sort of self-satirizing in its way.
Well, it's fairly lovingly cringe, right? It's like,
yeah, I guess. Yeah, this is the thing. Cringe. I'm like, I don't know. And to add to the difficulty, there are cringe comedies that I didn't like that now I do, or ones that I did like that now I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, and fully most cringe comedy I hate, like on its face. Makes me very uncomfortable. I just don't enjoy it. Yeah, because again, it's too relatable as, oh yeah, people can be shitty in just these ways. And anytime a movie is being like, hey, look how these shitty people are in a way that people are shitty lots of times, and doesn't it feel real? Yeah. So I hate it.
Well, I don't like
it
watching people.
Something that I'm like, no, it's comically. I like cartoonish villainy.
Yeah.
Not real villainy.
I don't generally like watching people being embarrassed. Even,
right?
Fake. I don't like that.
But every single Christopher Guest movie is just loaded with that. And I'm into it. And I don't know why.
Well, I mean, there is another part of it is that for me, in Christopher Guest movies, is how good at this some of these people are. Like, oh my God, these guys are so good at this. I mean, it's amazing how good they are. So the craft is a little bit of my attraction to it.
I will say this. Rest in peace. And I love him to death. I love him in pretty much everything I've ever seen him do. But we all need to be honest here. Fred Willard only plays one character.
Yes, that's true.
He was in Mascots. And I'm like, I remember this guy from all the other Christopher Guest movies I've seen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I love him. I wouldn't want him not there. But I'm like, we do have to come to terms with the fact that love you. Hope you're up in the heaven I don't believe exists. Looking down, being happy. But you had one bit. He was SCTV, so he probably had more back then. But like,
no, I mean, I've never seen him. He did lots of TV, and he was like a regular on some, not like a That's Incredible or something like it. Not that one. Maybe it was that one.
I mean, you're pretty old, so you probably have seen all sorts of TV shows.
But he has this in his shtick is the same pretty much always. Yeah.
And it's a good shtick. It's a good shtick, but this is only the one thing. But yeah, so I don't know what. And like reality TV tends to make me very uncomfortable.
Oh yeah, gosh, yeah.
But I watched a fair bit of it when I was, well, not in general, but I watched specifically. We watched Project Runway for years. And I loved it because it would allow me to be very judgmental, knowing it was a lie. I could just be judgmental about, like, I was like, I don't know these people. They are put in this crazy situation. I'm never going to meet them, so it's fine. And I was, and so I would have, I love this one, and I hate this one. And it was just very cathartic.
Mm.
And then other things. We liked Iron Chef. So when they did various Iron Chef competitions, we watched those, and we enjoyed those. Sort of in a similar vein there. And then there's weird ones. King of the Nerds was a short-lived show, and we were kind of into that. But for the most part, we couldn't stand reality television. We would watch certain reality competitions, but only certain ones. And I couldn't really tell you how or why. And for the most part, I hate it. So, These are the questions that keep me up at night. All right, we are out of time. I really have to pee, so we should wrap things up.
Okay.
We talked about a bunch of shit here today. If you've been affected by any of these statements, go to the blog, themagicthetalkinghat.com, or comment on YouTube. Also, please write in themagicthetalkinghat@gmail.com, because we love that stuff, and we want to use it to create content. Obliterate that like button. Do all the things to make us engage with the algorithm. I don't know what most of those are, so you'll have to research, but please do. And then come back next week for more algorithm interaction.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.